roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to spend the next hour with you as we talk mixed martial arts, top to bottom, maybe a little BKFC, because bare knuckle is the truth, man. I like it. All right, so on today's show, we're going to talk to Adrian Yanez, a winner from this past weekend's UFC on ESPN 27 card. He defeated Randy Costa. Exciting fight. I really liked that fight. Costa didn't have a bad showing, and this was a tough one. I feel like this matchup was created here on MMA Junkie, maybe even MMA Junkie Radio having a huge part. Both guys respectful, both guys representing a popular brand out there. We'll talk a little bit about that fight with Adrian Yanez. He got the result, but not before experiencing some hardship and some adversity early on. John Anik will join us as well, the play-by-play commentator for the UFC for all of their big shows. He's their guy. He's our guy too, man. We've known that guy for a long time, and it's always a pleasure to talk to him for a few minutes here on Junkie Radio. Now, aside from that, we also got some of the latest news to discuss, including, of course, TJ Dillashaw's big win. We will recap the whole card, UFC on ESPN 27, TJ Dillashaw defeating Corey Sandhagen in the main event. We'll discuss that win and what it does for both of them top bantamweights. Rachel Ostovich, I told you BKFC would come up. She defeated Paige VanZant in the main event over there at BKFC this past Friday. Macy Shison, unfortunately, had to pull out of her fight versus Aspen Ladd. Aspen Ladd was saying, give me Misha Tate, give me someone I want to fight. She hadn't fought in about a year because of that knee injury she suffered. You could tell she really wanted to fight, but it wasn't going to happen. It was just too late a notice to probably be even entertained asking any bantamweight, let alone Misha Tate, who had just fought the week before and looked great, by the way. It's not like I'm against that matchup. I didn't think they could turn it over that quickly. Gilbert Burns, he wants Leon Edwards. Holly Holm wants Misha Tate. Lots to discuss here on a Monday, July 26th. We'll be back. It's MMA Junkie Radio. Here we go. Want to set the times for you all that are watching the show live here on Monday, July 26th, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. We just started a few minutes ago. Adrian Yanez will join us at 12:20 p.m. Eastern, 9:20 a.m. Pacific. John Anik, 12:40 Eastern, 12:40 p.m. Eastern, 9:40 a.m. Pacific. Goes TJ Dillashaw. He's back. A, that was a great fight. B, no one's stock dropped. C was a controversial decision, kind of had it all, you know, for a main event, one that we had been waiting for a while.
I didn't even know where we were going to start off on today's show because you could literally go in any direction because there was so many good storylines this weekend. But yeah, if we're starting there, I mean, I'll just throw it out there right away. I had Sandhagen winning the fight, but I felt like it was a close fight. And I don't think either way, teetering back and forth either way, I don't think it's a robbery of any kind. It was a really close fight. I just felt Corey made more of his situations, and I think he landed the stronger shots, had a little bit more damage. But I can see if somebody picked TJ, I don't think they're crazy or anything like that. But yeah, man, that was a hell of a fight. And TJ Dillashaw, I thought he looked pretty good considering the things that happened to him, starting with his knee and then the big gash that he had, where he had it. I mean, yeah. I promise you, blood got in his eye at some point. And I mean, we've all had things get in our eyes before. It stings. It's very hard to get rid of, especially in the middle of a fight with somebody trying to hit you. So who knows how that fight would have gone had those things not happened. But I thought TJ looked pretty damn good.
No doubt. I mean, he's asking for a title shot. Some are backing that. He also left an opening for the possibility of, all right, I'll take another fight if that didn't happen. I wish he wouldn't have said that because it doesn't help his case. I think you got to be firm and assertive and not leave that opening. But he left it, and I heard it. So right away I started looking at, well, what if that did happen, you know? But I have some names. But, yeah, look, I think Dillashaw winning round one was pretty clear. Sanhagen winning round two was pretty clear. Heck, I think even Dillashaw winning round three was pretty clear. Four and five were, I think, closer. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that's where the judges differed. In fact, let me pull up the judges' scorecards here.
I want to say it was round four, right?
It was. So the three judges were Derek Cleary, Sal D'Amato, and Junichiro Kamijo. And by the way, MMA Decisions had probably about, if I had to guess, 20 media scores turned in, and I would say two-thirds of them went to Corey Sanhagen. That was about six for Dillashaw, and if I had to guess, maybe that looks like about 15 for Sanhagen. So maybe even a 3-1 ratio, 2-3 ratio, something like that. And again, the ones that matter are the ones turned in by the judges. So in round one, Cleary, D'Amato, and Kamijo had all three 10-9 for Dillashaw. In round two, I don't need to say the names anymore. Cleary, D'Amato, and Kamijo all had 10-9 for Sanhagen. Well, heck, yeah, in round three, consistent across the board, too, for Dillashaw. So they got Dillashaw 2-1 going into round three. And now I think is when it's important to name off the judges and what they did in rounds four and five. So in rounds four, Cleary and D'Amato had Sanhagen up 10-9. So their scores were 2-2 going into round five. Kamijo had Dillashaw up 3-1. So basically, Sanhagen's drawing dead, if you want to look at it from the viewpoint that it didn't look like anyone was really going to 10-8 anybody. 10-8s aren't that common. They're more common than they used to be. But, you know, that's kind of how we look at it. I mean, we rarely do we say, oh, well, there could be the 10-8. I mean, there could be, but, you know, it just looked like he was drawing dead at that point. I guess he would need the finish. And then comes round five, in which Cleary and Kamijo go 10-9 Sanhagen. Now, remember, with Camijo's card, it didn't matter because he had already given three to Dillashaw. So that card's done, 48-47 Dillashaw. With Cleary, it mattered because he favored Sanhagen. Remember, it was 2-2 on his card, and he goes Sanhagen, so now it's 3-2 Sanhagen. And then Sal D'Amato, he's 2-2 going into round five. He saw it for Dillashaw, so he was the dissenting judge in round five. And in round four, the dissenting judge was Kamijo. So that's why you got 48-47 twice for Dillashaw. Remember, D'Amato broke the tie in round five. Kamijo already had him winning. Sanhagen was drawing dead on his card, and then Cleary turned in for Sanhagen. Now, I bring this up because every once in a while it's fun to say, well, what do you think of live scoring? Now, I'm not a fan of it, honestly. But somebody presented the case of, well, what if it's 2-2 going into the last round? Would you post them then? I mean, maybe, you know. But remember, we have a cut in play. All right? We have a cut in play. And if they don't post them, that means it's not 2-2. But then again, the rounds have been close. So could Dillashaw assume that he's winning? Because let's say in round five, that blood gets even worse. And, you know, for whatever reason, he gets a finger graze or something. He goes, no, you know, whatever. And you can affect when a fight can stop and they go to the judge's scorecard. I mean, so many things can happen. So that's why I've kind of been shut down on, you know, what they should do as far as open scoring. But regardless, that's how the fight played out. I had taken Sanhagen on my staff picks. And I also had Sanhagen in a parlay at the end. I wasn't even chasing. I just said, let's just do this. Dillashaw's a former champ twice with three title defenses. Respect to him, but he hadn't fought in 2.5 years. and he was fighting against a younger guy with a reach advantage. You know, there's just certain little criterias right away where you're like, okay, southpaw, reach, youth. You know, of course, Dominic Cruz says there is no ring rust. I disagree. There's some. It's easy to say it when you're winning, but I had winning, but I thought they were going to say Dillashaw's name. I always tell people, who did I think won? Who do I think the judges are going to score? And what's my belly tell me? And my belly told me you're about to lose this parlay right here. I had a feeling they were going to score it for the judges. I would have had no problem had they scored it for Sandhagen. It was close. I don't think either side was a robbery, even though it does look like 3-1 or 2-3, you know, on the media scores. But anyway, it was a fun fight, man. I really, really liked it. Kudos to TJ Dillashaw overcoming so much. The cut, the knee, the time off, fighting a killer, you know, former probably friend / part-time teammate. He did it, man.
Man, my brain is blowing up right now. So one thing I want to address is ring rust. There is ring rust. However, it doesn't affect everyone. It's on a case-to-case basis, right? It's how you treat it. I think you can very easily get past ring rust if you want. If you do the right things physically and mentally, then it shouldn't affect you. But it is a thing because there's plenty of fighters that have said, that was my issue. So I think
they far outweigh the ones that say they didn't. So yeah, I believe you. Right. Yep.
Yeah. And then as far as open scoring goes, open scoring has been probably my arch nemesis for the last few years. I just feel like there are so many things that can go wrong with open scoring that it's just going to put us back in the same situation where sometimes it's going to be right and sometimes it's going to be wrong. And that's what we already have with these judges. For the most part, these judges get it right. Every once in a while, yeah, they have a brain fart. And unfortunately, it costs the fighter a lot. I think it's more on the system, you know, the way a fighter gets his win bonus and all that. Like, that sucks. I think that maybe needs to be fixed a little bit more. But judging is always going to be off, whether it's MMA or boxing or whatever, Olympic sports. Judging will always be something that will be a little off. But if you do open scoring, okay, like you said, if there's an injury, a cut, something like that, somebody could play to that. Somebody could play to a lead, and it can make a fight really boring. But the one big thing that I have, the big problem that I have with open scoring is the effect the fans can have, okay? We're all human. And if a judge turns in a dumb score, and he looks up and he sees the other two judges did something different, and the crowd is booing, trust me, there's a good chance that guy might try and make that up later on. When he's judging a fight, if it's close, he might go, oh, it seems like I might have made a mistake in the last round, so I think I'm just going to teeter to the other guy this round to make up for it. Those boos, man. I mean, George, you've played fantasy football, right? What happens when you feel like you've selected the wrong player, when everybody laughs or everybody went running back instead of quarterback? You kind of go, oh, man, did I screw up? And you might make your next pick based off of that, right? And then you go back and you look at your squad and you go, man, why did I listen to those idiots? I should have just stuck to my guns. We're all human. We're all going to make those mistakes. If you do open scoring, I promise you will have some of those scenarios.
Some of the best examples are even in high-level sports. Yeah. The makeup call, that is no joke in the NBA. It's no joke in soccer. You know, I think the referees know it, and if they can find a way to kind of level things out a little, they will subconsciously. They'll never come to the post-fight press conference and go, well, we were just leveling things out. They're never going to say that, you know. But I think they know, and when they can, they will, as long as, you know, probably as long as it's not the last play of a game. You know, that's when they tend to swallow their whistles and just let the players decide it. You know, but up until that point, every once in a while, I think you'll see it. Football as well. You just can't see everything, and you just can't get it all right. You try your best. And I think it was Instagram. Somebody said, get Herb out of there. Who are you going to put in? All right, Herzog and Beltran, you all get kind of promoted, you know, and Mergliata, whoever, and you start doing more pro fights. And so obviously someone's got to fill in to their spots, like no-nonsense Keith Peterson. He's been doing that. Frank Trigg, you know, they start all moving up. You don't think they're going to mess up? You don't think they have messed up? They have. What are you going to do, launch them? you know, they do way more right than wrong. And when they do wrong, it's judgment call at high speed. We're watching our third, fourth, and fifth replay, and then finally going, oh, he did tap. I'm silly, you know, and you got a beer in your hand while you're doing it. Yeah, I missed it. I didn't see that angle. His leg was in the way, you know, like, no, they're there. But the judges, I don't know about that Barbara Miranda fight, but I don't want to skip around. So let's finish here with Dillashaw and Sanhagen. Did Dillashaw earn a title shot? Like, he says, give me the Jan Sterling winner, which is going to take place, I think, in late October. Right now, it's late July. So that's 3 months. So he has to wait 3 months to find out who he would fight and then hope that the winner of that fight goes, I'd like to fight in 3 months. Therefore, they would fight. Therefore, Dillashaw would fight in 6 months. I think Dillashaw would wait 6 months if he had his crystal ball and saw that that's exactly what could play out. But remember, fight number two could be a classic. Now they're 1-1. Dana White goes, we got to run it back. Dillashaw's going to go, oh, you know. It could be controversial. One guy could win and break his knuckle, and he's out for another 6 months. Plus this three, now you're looking at nine. Does, you know, Dillashaw missed 2.5 years. Does he want to miss more? You know, I don't know. Now, Dillashaw left an opening. If I have to take someone else, I will. And I think he should have just kept that to himself, unless he felt strongly about it. But I think he's been saying, I want a title shot. Heck, he wanted a title shot when he came back from suspension. But we'll see. There's some that division just has so much going on. The Munoz-Aldo fight is going to be a lot of fun. I think the winner there has – you know, they're going to have some say in what happens in that next wave of contendership if we're giving this to Dillashaw right away. Aldo may have a little bit longer of a road than Munoz because he just had a title shot. But he's Jose Aldo, for crying out loud. Who knows? Corey Sanhagen, what happens to him? I don't know, but don't give up on that guy. I saw, and I know, I don't like to get caught up in, oh, those are just a bunch of trolls or just a bunch of haters. I'm the one that says that, so I don't really get too caught up in it. But I think in mixed within these trolls and haters are fans that are casual and they're focused more on saying stupid, dumb stuff rather than improving as a fan. So I'll address it to them. Sanhagen got slept by, submitted by Aljamain Sterling quickly. He came back, folks, and beat Frankie Edgar and Marias. So he came back strong from that loss. What leads you to believe that him being a younger guy who most media thought he won this fight, Ghost thought he won this fight, what leads you to believe that he has that much to tweak? There's some tweaking going on. He probably learned a lot, and he's taking the loss like a man. He says, I don't want to cry. Like, I don't want to whine like a baby. He's going to get back to work. What makes you think he doesn't come back and win two more impressively and then does fight for the title? This guy could very easily fight for the title in about maybe late 2022.
Mm-hmm. But going back to your original question, could TJ get the next shot? I don't want to sound like a TJ hater. I actually really like his style. I think it's a fun style. I think he's shown a lot of improvement since the first time we saw him in the UFC. Could he get a title shot? Maybe. But did he earn it? No. That is always going to be no until we see more of him. It's hard to forget what happened, and I think he has to show us more that he's able to put this together for a good period of time. I think we need to see at least one more performance out of him before we do something like that, because I don't think it would sit right with a lot of people. But he did show the skills, in my opinion. I don't feel like he lost a step or anything like that. I think he has the skills to be a champion. And when you think about the champion right now and you look at his style, that would make for a great fight. But, dude, by the way, and I can't remember who said this on Twitter, but somebody just said, enough already. Can't we just anoint this weight class as the best weight class? And I think this is it, man. You can always make an argument for 155. But
I hope that person's name on Twitter was GG's cosigner, because I've been saying that for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's there's just no way around it. There's killer after killer. And 155 was like that for the longest time. But
I may say 55 in 2 weeks, honestly. It goes back and forth. I was saying welterweight for a while. I used to say featherweight years ago. But bantamweight is sick. And bantamweight is special because they have those former champs like Garbrandt, Dillashaw, Cruz, who are all studs. And then they have the former champs like Edgar and Aldo that dropped. And then they got all the killers, the longtime killers like Asunsa. I mean, they even have some WEC blood still in there, you know what I mean? Like Asunsa and Dillashaw. But the occasional drop-in from Uriah Faber. Young studs like Ricky Simone, Rob Font, Corey Sanhagen. It's pretty cool. But, all right, let's go with this right here. This is out of left field. We got to cover it because he's a big name and they had a rivalry. And he feels like the first two fights may not have gone fair. Are you open to Dillashaw versus Garbrandt if the UFC tells Dillashaw you need to do one more? Now, Garbrandt is coming off a loss. Dillashaw is coming off a win. But this is heated. Would you do it, Goz?
Absolutely, 100%. I think that makes sense. I think he deserves it. And you know it's going to be a good fight. I think he can make that happen. And I think it just makes perfect sense given the scenario that we're all in right now. How about you?
Yeah, okay, so it's not my first choice, but when I saw it, I was like, good for you, Cody Garbrandt. I'd love these guys went at each other, you know. It's 2-0, I get it, Garbrandt says, but what, were we on a playing field? Dillashaw says, the tests say I was, but I think for a lot of people there's doubt. But, man, just throwing all that aside, they're both former champs, former teammates, a lot of bad blood. If TJ Dillashaw has to take one before his title shot, and that's the one, consider me in.
I like it.
Yeah. All right, here's some quick results. Adrian Yanez is going to be popping in pretty soon. Speaking of bantamweights. Julian Pavia defeated Kyler Phillips. Majority decision there. 229-28, and a draw score was turned in. Darren Elkins defeated Derek Minner. The damage took some damage before unleashing damage and winning the fight. That's his style. That's how he rolls. Macy Barber defeated Miranda Maverick. We'll probably get into that one a little bit. Look, I had Maverick in my parlay. I don't mind losing parlays. I do them all the time. One could say I'm a master at it. But I think they got that one wrong. But we'll discuss that in just a sec. And, of course, Adrian Yanez defeated Randy Costa. Second round TKO stoppage for him. And by coincidence, he is ready to go. He is locked in and ready to go. We'll sort him out. We'll put him on the big screen. We'll be back with UFC bantamweight Adrian Yanez. There he is. There's the man, Adrian Yanez. Congrats. Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio. Congrats on your big win this past Saturday.
Man, thank you very much. It was definitely a fun one, a tough one for me as well. Thank you guys, man. I'm glad to be home.
Hey, you guys built it up. A lot of it was here on MMA Junkie Radio and MMA Junkie. You guys built it up. You did it with respect. I even heard somebody say, how about a beer afterwards? I don't know if you guys grabbed that beer or not. But you know what? Putting all that aside, you guys delivered. That was a scrap, man.
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely. We both knew what we wanted to do, and we both knew that us as fighters, we know exactly who we were, and we understood that when we both were walking into the cage and even outside the cage, we both knew that we're both respectable guys. So it was fun for us because, like, man, like, you hardly ever get that anymore. You never get really that respect factor in MMA as much anymore, just because, like, everything is kind of almost like built off fake gimmicks now. And this was 100% real. We both respected each other. And, you know, it was just one of those that it was refreshing to see. And it was refreshing to be a part of, honestly. The Dr. Pepper Rhesus, yeah, that was for fun. That was just for something for us to poke fun at. But other than that, the respect and, like, the admiration for each other, it's 100% real. Like I have 100% respect for that guy, no ill will towards him, and I really hope he comes back and rebounds back, like, phenomenally, you know. So it's all love for me.
So allow us to have a little bit of fun, because you're the man. You won. You got your hand raised. Aljamain Sterling was on our show, the champ, a few weeks ago, and he was giving you praise. But let us just bust your chops for a second. That jab, man, it took you a while to get over that jab. Man. It almost looked like one of those early Rocky movies. He was just pumping it, and your head was snapping and snapping.
Man, it was weird, man. It was super weird. I didn't know, because like I said, man, I thought he was going to come in super kick-oriented. I thought he was going to rely on his head kicks and everything. So I didn't want to move my head too much. And I was like, man, because if I move too much to the left, if I move too much to the right, that head kick's there. It limited what I wanted to do. And from the beginning, I knew I wanted to slow his legs down. So I wanted to kind of chop his legs down. So I was like single-minded too. So once he hit me with like the second or third jab, I got into this phase where I just wanted to go in there and just like hit him with a hard shot, make him stop. And that made me more like stiff. It made me more, it put me in a single minded where I started being stuck in the mud and I just couldn't get out the funk of like me just like wanting to go in there and land some hard shots. Like there's a couple of times where I threw a hard shot. I had to shake my arms down. I was like, God, like, man, I was getting mad. I was getting frustrated, but, you know, it was just a good jab. It was a mixture of like of a lot of things. It was Randy first and foremost, him and his jab. Like he had a fast jab. Like it was weird. It was like a changeup pitch. Like it started off slow, ended off really fast, hitting my face, and I was just like, damn. So it was a mixture of like Randy just getting really really good because I didn't know he even had a jab to begin with, and you know, and the change of speed and his jab and his length. And then also too, is like kind of like, it was just kind of hard to grasp his timing because, man, he has a weird little unorthodox stance. So it was just kind of hard to grasp his timing. Then once he figured out that I was having a harder time to grasp his time, he just kept going. He wanted to throw everything in the kitchen sink at me. And man, from the looks of my face, he did.
When do you think it was late first round, but where was it that you think you finally figured it out?
Man, I was starting to land the leg kicks and I started to land the oblique kicks because I wanted to try to, I wanted to go, instead of going low, I wanted to start going high with them. So to return back to them. So it was like one of the leg kicks and then I took a step forward and he took a big step back and I started throwing punches at him and I started noticing that he started taking the steps back and I kind of saw it in his face and I started like, well, let me start going to the body. And it was like in the minute and a half mark left in the round. And I started walking him down. And I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. I got it. Like, even though he was still hitting me with jabs, it was still kind of like, it was still in my favor because whenever I started walking him down, I started throwing my own jabs and I started throwing combinations at him. And I was like, oh, I'm getting closer with these punches. Like, cause I threw a double jab right handed, like in the first 2 minutes and it came nowhere. That right hand came nowhere close. And I threw that same combination again and it literally only missed by an inch or two. And I was like, oh, I'm there. I just need to go. I just need to start walking forward. I just need to start walking him down. And that minute and a half, I was like, okay, that's it. I got it. Like in my head, I just knew at that point I had it. And then I started looking for his body a lot more. I started trying to hunt for his liver. Cause man, like at some points I wasn't able to hit his head. So I was like, let me go to the body. So I hit the body. And then after that, I noticed his hands were dropping a little bit more. And so that made me be able to put the pressure on even faster than that. And then going into that second round, I just was like, okay, walk him down. On his back foot, I really don't think he was able to fight off of it. And it just opened up so much more for me whenever I started walking him down.
Adrian, we like you both, man. We've interviewed both of you guys, and we've had a great time with both of you guys. And I started thinking about it. Like it's probably the only time I've ever rooted for a draw, like before the fight. But I thought about it, and you're right. The way you guys came about everything, you were so cordial and all that. But when the fight was about to start, I was playing mind games in my head, and I was thinking, did you guys being so cordial to each other and so nice, did that almost create more pressure than if when you were going into a fight kind of hating the guy in front of you? Like, did it make things even, like, a little bit more difficult?
Honestly, it should have, but it didn't. And especially in Randy's case, because he came out with guns blazing. But honestly, for me, it didn't. If I was thrown off by anything, it was because of Randy. Randy went out there and he as soon as he had his range, he found his range pretty quickly, and he threw the jab. And once he started snapping it, you know, he just kept snapping it, which is more props to him. So, yeah, no, there was nothing. There was none of that. Like, there was none of that. Like me being timid to fight him because I liked him or anything like that. There was nothing to that. And I wouldn't want that to be the narrative or anything like that, because it was all on Randy. Randy did his thing in the first round. But that was, like, it was all Randy. So, like, on my end, there wasn't no pressure on me. I knew I had to go out there and fight. Randy knew he had to go out there and fight. So, no, there was no pressure on me. Like, I don't believe there's any pressure on either of us to go out there and perform or anything like that. It was just a style matchup that was perfect. It was absolutely perfect for the both of us.
The whole Dr. Pepper Reese's thing has had my mind blown. I see a Sprite in the background. I'm thinking, who is he calling out next? Who likes Sprite?
Oh, nah. This is my Dr. Pepper, man. Hold on. Let me see if you can see it right quick. But oh yeah, I got the little Dr. Pepper mini fridge right there. Like, I don't know if you can barely see it. Shout out to Juan Cardenas. I got it right after the fight, so I thought that was amazing.
I like how he shoots with the camera too. He goes, "Oh yeah, the pepper thing," and then he brought it back just enough to squeeze out Sprite.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, no shine for them right now. It's all Dr. Pepper season, man.
Nice. Well,
I thought it was a Joker roommate or something like that.
So look, Adrian, you and Randy built that last fight. You brought each other up. You stated why it would be a great matchup. You even gave us the angle of Reese's and Dr. Pepper. If I'm a matchmaker, I feel like, why should I do the next? Like, I should just let him do it. Do you have anybody in mind? Do you have a scenario in mind? I feel like you should be rewarded. Like, this is where I want to do it. This is what I want. This is how I want to do it. You deserve that. Do you have anything in mind right now?
Man, honestly, I hadn't thought of anything, because I've been going back and watching the fights and trying to learn as much as I can. And trying to see what I need to work on for my next fight and what's coming up next. Man, because I didn't want to look past Randy at all. Didn't even want to think about what was next. I did have a timeline of what I wanted to do, like September, November. September, fight September, fight November, and stay pretty active. But, man, like, I just wasn't looking at names. I wasn't looking at anything, because Randy was 100%, like, on my mind, because I knew how tough he was. I knew he was going to come in and try to put my lights out. And so, like, it was just one of those that I didn't want to look past Randy at absolutely at all. So, to me, I was kind of just – it. My mind was on Randy. So, I really have no names. And my name's been thrown around on Twitter with a lot of people. There's a couple names in there that I'm looking at. Somebody even threw in that guy's name that fought Sean O'Malley this last time around, because they're like, they're both tough. I'm like, yeah, no, that would be fun, but I don't want that. I don't want that fight, because, it would just be two losses for that guy, and I wouldn't want to do that, but yeah, no, I had to sit back and actually look at the division and see where I'm ranked at, see where I stacked up, and then make my next decision.
I do like the other side of what you said, Sean O'Malley. That would make for a great matchup in my eyes.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun too. That'd be fun too. But I gotta tighten up some things before I go up there, man. Randy opened up some things I need to work on, and I gotta go to work. I can't sit around. I gotta go to work.
Here's the first thing I think you need to work on. This was thrown out last time, and the last time we interviewed you, and I think it just needs to happen. Whoever fights you next, are they gonna fight Adrian Yanez or Adrian Mantequilla Yanez?
Oh, Mantequilla. Man.
That shit's not a great name.
Yeah, man, honestly, like the hands, like in the I was mantequilla in round two. Round one, man, I was hard butter, man. I was hard butter. I was stuck around. I wasn't slippery. I was I was the block. I was in block position. I wasn't mantequilla. I wasn't smooth, ready to spread on tortillas or anything like that, man. So I gotta wait. Some people on Twitter were actually photoshopping my face on the Punisher, Frank Castle's Punisher, and like the one that was on Netflix or whichever one. So they're saying I looked like him for this last fight, and I was like, well, all right, I get it. I get it.
That's funny, man. I love that. I love that nickname, Mantequilla. All right, so I got a couple names, and let's see if you what you think of them. Because one way to continue to move up is you do want to face someone who's also coming off a win, like yourself. And or sometimes you catch a veteran who has a name, even if they may have lost their last fight, it's still progression upward. So I can think of two guys that I don't think they have fights booked, but I think they fit that mold. A Sun Sao and Rivera. What do you
Oh
think of
yeah.
two veterans like
Oh.
that?
Oh, both those guys are phenomenal names and like guys who I respect. I was watching Rafael Sun Sao fight whenever, man, like I was still amateur days, and that was like back in 2012. So like I have I have like a big respect for the both of them. So like both those names sound very, very nice. Like they've been in the game for a very long time. And that I think is just it's just great all around. I think that would be a great fight either way.
Yeah, man. A Sun Sal is even a one of the last remaining WEC guys.
Oh
So,
yeah.
like,
Oh
literally,
yeah.
that's
So those
pretty
names
cool,
are
I think.
great.
Maybe I geek out on stuff like that, but there's not too many guys that remain from Pride, like Fabricio Werdum, for example. I don't think Shogun Hua was done yet, but there's still a few fighters that fought in Pride at one time, Pride Fighting Championships. And there's still a few guys that fought in WEC, like a Sun Sao. I think it'd be pretty cool to mix it up with one of those guys, one of those legends from either organization. And at some point, they'll phase out Strikeforce, but it's just part of the history of the game. So I thought that might be a pretty interesting angle there too.
Oh yeah, I think they'd both be great. I think because that would actually set me up even higher for my next fight. So those are great setup fights. Those are great setup fights. Like tune ups to get those guys who are in the top 15 easily.
You're thinking October, September, October. Is that what you said, or you want to wait a little longer?
I would want September. Like I definitely want September, and then fight November, end of November, then kind of chill out for December, January, February, and then after that. Be very, very active.
So I don't want to play the gotcha game, but you did say there's some things I want to work on. Whatever it is, you can tweak it quick. We're at the end of July. Fighting in September is 2 months away. You can do those tweaks and be ready to go in September.
Oh yeah, man. There's a lot of downtime. I've been really focusing on making sure that I'm getting my technique. There's times where like I can spend an extra 30 minutes doing something. There's definitely instead of like trying to make sure I like get home at like making sure I get home at night at a little bit like at a good time, I can sit back and just work on a couple things here and there. I might lose a little bit of sleep, but at the same time, as long as it's for a good thing that I'm working on.
Last question. When this interview ends, is the first thing you're going to say is, man, who put the Sprite in the background? You guys are killing me here.
Oh no, man. Actually, I don't know who put it back there, but I had to make sure I had my Dr. Pepper in hand
You did have
at all
it. You
times.
did
I
have
had
it.
to make sure.
Yeah. All right, Adrian. Thanks for the time. It was a blast talking to you. And it was a fun fight. You guys put on a show from beginning to end, creating the fight. Fight week itself, the respect before and afterwards. Did you guys have that beer by the way, or afterwards or no?
No. No, man, my flight was super early, so I really didn't get a chance to do much. I just had a chance to go eat with my manager and the family, his family and all that stuff, and pretty much had to fly back early morning back home. And good thing I did because I had to go corner my training partners for Fury FC down here in Houston. So I've been nonstop work since I got back. So today is like finally the day that I've been able to kind of just mellow out for a little bit.
Well, when COVID's over, we'll probably get back to how it used to be, and that's the there's a host hotel, at least in Vegas, host hotel, and then there's a little bit more of a closing ceremonies, at the host hotel's bar. And I've seen a lot of great fight or a lot of fighters that have had great fights just get together with fans and everything. So we need to get back to that. Right now it's a different era. And respect to you for flying home and cornering your boys, man. You were in a war, but you decided to go there and be loyal. That's awesome.
Oh yeah, man. Hey, they're a part of my crew, man. 100%. Like, never gonna turn my back on them, even if I have a fight. If I have a fight the next, like the day before theirs, man, I'm making sure I'm getting home to make sure I'm there for them. They're there for me 100% of the time. I have to be there for them 100% of the time, man. Because without them, I wouldn't have been in that cage. I wouldn't have been ready to get in there, man. So I'm 100% behind them. 100% behind my team. Anybody who's helped me, man, like, I'm 100% there. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. I have to go out there and if you show me the 100% loyalty, I'm gonna give you 100% of my loyalty.
All right, Adrian, I think we froze here, but we caught what you said via audio. Thank you very much for the time today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thank you very much, man. Y'all have a good one.
All right, you too. All right, there you go. Adrian Yanez, UFC Bantamweight. I wasn't 100% sure, but I was 99.9 that he'll make an appearance in the USA Today Sports MMA Junkie Rankings.
Oh wow.
Yeah, he's on a nice little run. You got a streak going, you finish. That's one way to get into our honorable mention, and then that starts the whole upward. When you keep winning, then you got to get those ranked names. You got to beat those ranked names, and you start making bigger moves. So I had to focus a lot on the bantamweight division. I think there was four matchups because Pavia moved up. He took out Kyler Phillips. Phillips made a splash because he beat Yong Song Yadong, but Song Yadong's now out, so a little bit of his equity. Was lost there. There was one other fight too. Arce, man, what a debut. Julio Arce hadn't fought in a couple of years. He debuted nicely, man. Keep an eye on that guy. He fought as featherweight for a while, but keep an eye on that guy as a bantamweight. I can tell the skills definitely translated. I'm getting scared, goes. We're 2 minutes into John Anik time, and I haven't seen him pop in. And that guy's so by the book, you know what I mean? So hopefully everything's all right with him. Had to lock him down early. I bet you he gets a lot of requests. This guy is just uber popular and famous now as the lead commentator for the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Three kids now. He's got his podcast, the Anik and Florian podcast, and then he has a part in his twin brother and Bilal Muhammad and Remember the Show. So I'm sure he wears a lot of hats, but hopefully he pops in here. All right, look, in the meantime, let's keep going over this card. Did you have Barber beating Maverick, by the way? What kind of a scorecard did you have? It was a split decision. One judge did have it for Miranda Maverick, but two had it for Barber. But this was one that really, really upset folk on Twitter. I'm just starting to look now on MMA decisions just to see how that was, but I anticipate it was one-sided. How did you score it?
I thought Miranda won rounds one and two,
Yeah.
and then he won round three. But I didn't think it was like a runaway either. Like, I mean, I don't get it, but at the same time, it's not like the worst thing I've ever seen. So, but I had her winning one and two.
Goes over 20 scores were turned in on MMA decisions by media. All of them for Maverick.
Yeah.
All of them for Maverick. That's
But
how one-sided this was. I was in an uproar because I couldn't believe it. But you know how sometimes it's so bad where you just go and you just sit there. You don't even want to like describe how mad you are. You're just like, in fact, this is how ridiculous it was. I was even thinking this is going to be that one fight where they come back and there's a Steve Harvey moment and they're going to have to explain, like, it'll be Brandon Fitzgerald in this case. Folks, we want to apologize, but there was a mistake, behind the scenes, and turns out that the judges actually scored. I actually thought, goes, for a moment that that might happen. Of course, it never came, so
Yeah.
that was that.
I just thought it was one of those scenarios where, the whole year you hear MMA media, you guys are insane. You guys are crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. Hey, by the way, on MMA decisions, MMA media had me winning every, like, you never win in that situation. So I thought it was clear 1 and 2 were for her. But, you know, these things happen in the sport, and it happens in just about every sport.
Yeah. Well, this is an egregious one. All right. There he is. John Anik. He is with us. We'll set him up here on the big screen, and we'll be back with the boss man, John Anik, lead commentator for the UFC. What's up, John? How are you? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio.
Gentlemen, of the probably 36 times that we have chopped it up together, this is the only time I've been late. So I would like to apologize for being 2.5 minutes tardy today. My boss, Zach Candido, called. I got to take that call. But I told him MMA Junkie Radio is waiting. So it is great to see your shiny faces.
Oh, man. Thank you. Yeah, no, we knew you'd show up. That's just you. Your character speaks volumes for yourself. And that's why I always heap the praise, because you did it with hard work. You did it the hard way. So I knew you'd show up, John.
Yeah, I'm here. You knew I'd be here. But I apologize for being late a few minutes, but it's good to see you boys. I assume we're just going to talk about the LA kid, Daniel Rodriguez, right? That's all everybody in LA is talking about, right?
Oh, I guess we got to take that one. Yeah, you know, we could. He is a stud. He is going to be ranked pretty soon. Like, he's really, really gonna start to shoot up and get those contender fights. So shout out to D-Rod. But wow, you threw a curveball.
I know, of course. No, well, because you guys resonate LA with me in certain respects. And he is like LA, baby, you know, with the tattoos and everything else. So yeah, a little curveball. Hey, Goz is always throwing me curveball. Right?
We are.
I know I gotta be sober for MMA Junkie Radio because Goz is coming. So
we are, man. He got us. He's right. Like, you know, we're actually putting on pullovers or we got hats in the background just to be jerks. And on this one, he got us. So good one on you, John Anik. All right. You know what's funny? I told Goz, I go, we got to get him back on. The last time he was back on, we actually all three agreed that the Atlanta Hawks would go pretty far because they had a great free agency period, you know, which was later in the year. So it hasn't been a whole year. It's been about 9 months, 8 months, something like that. And how about the fact that when they got to the semifinals, I was telling Goz, I go, wow, I go, that's something we actually talked about. The reason I'm bringing it up is because when the show was over, people were thinking that all three of us were crazy, and how did one of us not right. check the other one?
Well, because eventually these organizations do break through, and certainly we couldn't have foreseen them bringing in Nate McMillan. And even we were talking about Rajon Rondo, if I'm not mistaken, he wasn't even a part of the team at year's end. But obviously they have the superstar and they have the right head coach. And in a lot of these sports, those are big things, you know, as any New Englander will tell you, head coach, quarterback, right? So no, they're moving in the right direction. And for me, as I've told you guys, as I get older as a sports fan, even the Boston Celtics fan in me that grew up not liking Dominique Wilkins or Doc Rivers or the Atlanta Hawks because they were what amounted to an Eastern Conference rival, I'm softened now. And at 43 years of age, I was happy for the city of Atlanta to be able to sort of ride that wave.
John, you're an original through and through, but growing up, I'm sure you watched a lot of sports. Did you ever pick up anything from the great Johnny Most?
You know, I didn't listen to Johnny a ton except for in like highlight form because just circumstantially I wasn't in the car at night, whereas Gino Cappelletti and Gil Santos for the New England Patriots, you know, leaving games early or whatever it was. Oftentimes I found myself listening to the Patriots guys. But Sean McDonough, I guess, was the guy that I plucked the most things from. But yeah, Johnny Most, if you don't know the name, Google Johnny Most. They don't come more legendary than that man. You can be sure. What a voice, what a tone, what a style. Total effing legend, man.
For sure. And you know, it's funny because I think of the rivalry of the Celtics Lakers fans really love Johnny Most. Maybe for the 2.5 hours that the game was on, maybe they didn't then, but, and vice versa, the Celtics fan loved Chick Hearn, but I'll tell you who we didn't love was Tom Heinsohn. That guy, man, he was Team Boston all the way. But anyway, all right, let's get into some MMA. I wanted to ask you how your voice carries a lot now. And it's interesting because when you look on Anik and Florian, you know, the tweets, you encourage people to turn in their scores. You're vocal about how you're scoring fights, but everyone, you're so beloved. Everyone, I guess, do they ever give you a problem with you giving an opposing score or an opinion? Does that ever come back?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look hard enough, you know, on any given Sunday morning, I'm either the consummate promotional shill or the opposite of that. So sometimes I like to enter the fray. Certainly when I'm calling fights, you will never see me. Rarely, I should say. I think one time in 10 years, I've actually tweeted during a fight. And I think it was recently after Diaz and Edwards. I think I tweeted something like, you wish you had a 209 tattoo right after Nate rallied against Leon. But when I'm not calling fights, as was the case this past Saturday night, certainly I don't mind scoring a fight and putting my score out there. And in the case of TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sandhagen, this is a fight that I thought was worthwhile enough to go watch back before we taped our podcast this morning. So, yeah, I had it 48-47 Sandhagen. I know people out there certainly disagree. I think I am with the majority in this instance, but I just respect all opinions except those that deviate so far from the mean and the majority opinion that they're almost indefensible, as in a non-10-8 for Kyler Phillips in round one. I don't know how a paid judge or a high-level fan could defend a non-10-8 for Phillips in round one.
They call it a traveling circus sometimes because it's the same faces that travel around the world. Maybe not so much the last 18 months, but you know what I'm talking about. What about with not fighters, but judges and refs? Are there any types of huddles, and how are those, or do you tend to stay away from that?
Well, a lot of those guys are pretty close. And you talk about sort of the traveling circus. Like, I can find myself on a shuttle to an arena with these mixed martial arts judges like Sal D'Amato. And that is an interesting circumstance, right? Because not that I'm paid to criticize per se. I'm not a color commentator. I'm a play-by-play announcer. But inevitably, it comes in my lane at times where I have to be critical of judges. So it's weird when you're transporting to the arenas with these guys. But I've had conversations about judging with Sal and with Chris Lee. And I'm motivated after this weekend to reach out to Sal in particular, because I think he's the elite of the MMA judges, just to pick his brain a little bit. Judges and referees, as you guys know, are not encouraged to go on the record, but most of these guys are receptive to speaking to us privately. But yeah, in the past when I've had issues, like when John McCarthy was a referee and not a commentator, and I've had issues with scoring or judging or officiating, I've just gone to John McCarthy because to me, he's like the number one resource in MMA. But after what I saw this weekend, I'm going to seek out Sal just to get some of my questions answered, and whatever I can relay to the masses, I will.
John, George and I had a little discussion earlier, and this happens every couple months. Open scoring gets thrown out there. George could maybe be convinced, but I think we're both sort of on the same page that I just feel like no matter what you do, there's always going to be some little gray area. And I use the example of, and I'm sure you've been through this, a fantasy football draft where you give out your selection and everybody in the room laughs. And right, the first thing you think is, oh man, I messed up. And you try and make up for it in the next round, right? I feel like that's what's going to happen. If you have two scores and you're going the opposite way and you hear the crowd booing, it's human nature. I feel like you're going to maybe try and make that up if you see a close round or something. It's difficult, man. There's a lot of things. Fighters can fight, play for leads, that sort of thing. I don't know that that's going to solve the issue. How do you feel with open scoring?
So I am all for change, right? Like the Boston Celtics cleaning up house in their front office, open scoring in MMA, more judges. I mean, I don't want to be inefficient in my response here and talk about all the ways that I think we could affect change. But you're right. Excuse me. You're right insofar as open scoring effectively changes the sport of mixed martial arts, right? You have a fighter who has to change course for a third round because maybe they thought they were up 2-0 and instead it's 1-1. Then what happens if you have a fighter who's up 2-0 and then they sit on a lead, they get on a bicycle for 5 minutes and they get booed out of the arena for doing so. So it's not as though some of these solutions can't be poked through, but we have to be thinking about solutions because we keep finding ourselves in these situations where on any given Saturday night, 85% of the mixed martial arts fandom scores a fight one way, and two of the three scorecards in the world that matter have it another way. So I'm all for open scoring, even though I understand fully to your point that it's not the perfect solution.
John, you brought up something earlier when you were talking about watching the fights, and I've often wondered, what does that look like? What does John Anik, like when you're watching fights, is it everybody leave the room, I want to be alone? Do you have your fight food with you? Are you on a recliner? How, when you finally get to enjoy that moment that we all get to enjoy, what goes down in the Anik household?
I think this answer is going to be massively disappointing. I mean, man, did we enjoy that 7 p.m. Eastern start time. But oftentimes it'll be me watching on my phone, sometimes on mute while putting a kid to sleep, getting it in wherever I can get it in. Obviously, those later cards are a challenge for me because I'm essentially up at 5:30 a.m. Eastern. So a 10 p.m. Eastern main card goes likely is not happening until Monday morning, ideally without results in my head. And then I watch the fights and then that dovetails right into to the Anik and Florian podcast. But I try to be a father as much as I can because I'm away 100 nights a year. So if that means that my scorecard doesn't matter as much as it should, so be it. I will say, though, for this fight card, I was able to watch these fights uninterrupted, and that's why I feel so strongly about some of the scorecards. But yeah, oftentimes I'm multitasking, goes, you know, procreation is a real powerful thing.
I saw you chime in on Eric Nixick's Instagram post.
Yeah.
His wife and kids were on vacation in LA, it looked like, and he said, you know, God, I wish I could be there, but I'm chasing wins. John, what do you chase in this sport?
Gosh, you know, well, I'm chasing, that's a really good question. I mean, I'm chasing, you know, greatness for my kids, right? I'm trying to provide for my kids. So I feel like a lot of men and women feel this crazy pressure to provide. And that's really what I'm doing. And I'm trying to do it with my head down. Certainly, I have a dream job. I have a job that I love. I have the job that I want. It's not as though I have this long list of dream jobs out there. Certainly, I would love the chance to call an NFL football game, but I have my dream job. I really enjoy the process still, as exhausting as it may be. But I don't know that I'm chasing any individual greatness or chasing any legacy for my children in terms of the sport as much as I am chasing a paycheck trying to provide for them. But I am a massive, rabid mixed martial arts fan, and it's not lost on me that maybe 60% of your listenership would love to trade places with me and have my job, even though maybe there should be days that they shouldn't want that. But I don't know. I'm just, in a lot of respects, I'm just trying to provide for these children, and I feel like there's a lot of pressure on us to do so, and that's why we go away a third of the year.
I love it. Great answer, man. And I loved everybody that chimed in on Eric's post, because a lot of people could relate. You know, we're all kind of do separate jobs, but I guess we all are in that same circus, going back to what I was
saying. Like, if you guys won the lottery, would you still do MMA Junkie Radio? Because I've said to you guys, my dream job is to sit with you guys at the Mandalay Bay in a sports book and chop it up every day. You know, my job, your job have different demands. You know, is my ego so big that if I had $100 million in the bank, that I would still try to be the lead play-by-play voice of the UFC and not give some other kid or a younger guy the opportunity, right? You know, do I think I'm the best man for the job? I'm not going to answer that, right? But I don't know if I win the lottery, if I would stick around, right? Because isn't the real work downstairs with my kids, right? I'm very torn on a lot of this stuff. But I think one interesting proposition to people is, hey, if you won the lottery, would you still want to go to work on Monday? And I think if the answer is yes, you got a damn good job.
Yeah, goes. I will give him credit. He said that. I don't know that I've ever said that, because I think I've said, well, after I come back from my 3-month vacation around the world, hitting the bucket list of sporting events, you know, whatever's in season at that point, then sure, yeah, let's do it. Maybe not 5 days a week anymore. We'll downgrade it to 2. You know, that's what I used to say back in the day. But all right, let's close with this. Give me your updated moment. And by that, I mean, kind of like Al Michaels, do you believe in miracles? Do you have you pinned yours down to, or maybe give me a couple if you don't have one that hits over and over, or maybe one where fans have come up to you and said, your call of this fight or what you said still feels kind of gives me goosebumps.
Well, I think the one that I hear the most from fans about is probably Francis Ngannou and Alistair Overeem. And maybe that's just a little bit of a recency thing because Francis went on to win the title and that got repurposed a lot. But I feel like for me, Daniel, and Joe, to a man, when we're asked about the broadcast booth and special moments or calls, it's Thug Rose Namajunas times 2. Like, I don't even remember what we said, but as she is doing what she did to Zhang Weili, I'm not thinking about what she did to Joanna Jędrzejczyk at Madison Square Garden, but in terms of the top five times I've been most surprised, astonished, left speechless in that broadcast booth, top five all time, two of those five are Thug Rose Nama Yunus. So I got to lead the dance with that, my man.
All right. Sorry. And I do have one more, and that's a great answer because, I was thinking of Thug Rose. But, yes, the one with Zhang Weili was something else. All right. This has been a violent year, brother. And I remember hearing your call of McGregor, and you said, are you kidding me? You know, I'm sure a lot of that was concern for McGregor. The fact that it was a fight that was playing out that could go in so many directions, you know. But if we look back at Jacare's arm and you know, Crute having the nerve damage, Weidman, what is it that goes through your head at that particular moment? What are you feeling for some of these guys that you get to know so well over the years and from interviewing them? How does that one feel versus what you just described, the speechless feeling of great moments?
So it's harder to watch Chris Moutinho take that type of beating for me than it is to watch a guy like Impa Kasanganai get knocked out cold by Joaquin Buckley, right? Because I think most of us understand that it's the perpetual repeated damage that does more long-term damage than just getting knocked out cold. So those are the harder things for me to watch. Certainly when I hear Chris Weidman after the fact say that as he was writhing in pain, his brain immediately switched to that of a documentarian. And in that moment, he was trying to deal with the pain by thinking about documenting his recovery. Like, that is incredible to me. I was devastated for Conor McGregor. And there are other people out there that have said coldly that he got what he deserved. But in that moment, I'm absolutely devastated for Conor because I know he wanted to compete again in 3 months and then again 3 months later. So it's hard, man. It really is. And obviously, there are personal relationships that make it even harder. But man, this year has been something else. I think too, George, about all the violent knockouts like Jiří Procházka and Dan Ige. I mean, the competition for knockout of the year has never been stiffer, and we're not even at August 1st. So it's a violent game, my brothers. Nobody knows that better than you guys.
John, thank you as always for the time. It's always great to chop it up with you. We cover a lot, not just in this sport, but others. And we reciprocate that a dream job of ours would be to just chop it up, talking about anything and everything in the Mandalay Bay. In fact, when I was looking, I had to look very hard to see if you've ever actually made it into the studio for the interview. You know what I mean? Because I remember us talking outside the studio for like an hour one time. But yeah, it's been a while since we did that one. So when things open up, we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, I think I've visited you guys in your studio probably four or five times. I've been on once or twice, but we'll make it happen. But all the best to you guys, and don't lose my number.
All right, buddy. Take care.
See you guys. Thanks.
All right. All right, man. He's the best, goes. No way around it. John Anik is awesome. What an awesome person.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. We, our good friend Sam, who was visiting last week, we had a conversation about sportscasters and how we all are born with this group, right? That's there when we're there. And then and the next generation, like, so you and me, our generation, right? Like hearing Marv Albert, Keith Jackson, there's certain voices that you kind of equate with the NBA, with college football, that sort of thing. But then they go away and they start to be replaced by guys like, maybe like your godson, he's familiar with a Gus Johnson, right? The Mauro Ranallos of the world. We brought up John Anik as one of those guys that it's like, whenever he says today is my last day of calling MMA, that one's going to sting.
For sure. I'm getting used to Alexander the Great, you know, from watching. I think it's tough. I've been hearing that a lot. Man, it used to be so much easier to book him when he lived in Vegas, but that we're probably like almost a decade removed, maybe 7 or 8 years that he moved to Florida. Would have loved to pull him in a lot more often. But he, you know, it's a hectic schedule that the UFC people have. And I don't know. He is an example to young broadcasters. He does his job great. Very original. I mean, he literally put gambling on his back. A lot of us have talked about gambling, but he did it on the big stage. And look at how much it's blowing up. He had a very big hand in that. and preparation, which he'll be the first to go, well, I got that from Brian Stan. But guess what? He's now influenced, John, other commentators as well to up their game. And not to say that they sucked or anything like that. Cruz has always been a stud. But now Cruz's knowledge, probably with the John Anik influence, it's going far. The UFC's groomed a lot of great color commentators. It's just a matter of what your palate is. You know, who you like, Cormier, Cruz, Bisping. There's a lot of really, really good ones out there, Felder. And these guys, Fitzgerald is upping his game too. They're excellent point guards, you know. He's like a Trae Young. we'll close with what we started. No, seriously. But here's the last thing I'll say is you can run into John Anik on the strip and he'll treat you like he treated you even before all this happened, even before the sport blew up, the UFC continued to blow up, John Anik blew up. He's the same. He really threw me, though, goes with D-Rod. That's all you guys have had to cheer for lately because Dodgers have been in a tailspin. The Lakers got punted out of the second round. And I think last year we were actually working on those back-to-back LA championships. So when he said it, I was literally like,
But you got to eat it. You got to eat it because we've had big
mouths. You got to eat it. He did it so casually. He snuck up on me, man. You know, usually one of those is like, boom, you know, but he kind of did that creeper mode where you just kind of walk around or whatever, and then you come up from the side and pow. Yeah. All right. Thank you to John Anik and Adrian Yanez for their time. I do want to just say this because I think we said enough about the main card. Your other winners on Saturday night were Brendan Allen defeated Puna Soriano. Puna will be back, man. That's his first loss. He's got a lot of skills. He was fighting till the end. Nasruddin Imavov defeated Ian Hines. Mickey Gall, good win for him, man, defeating Jordan Williams. He was an underdog in that fight. Julio Arce, who I was talking about early, look out for him, man. He defeated Andre Ewell. Sajara Eubanks also looked good. 36 years of age, but she said, I finally tightened up diet, her ways, you know, her preparations. And she says, I really can do something. And she's right. She's beaten Lauren Murphy and Roxanne Mortaferri. So along with the Reed win, I could see her maybe start making some moves at flyweight if she can keep it up. Lastly, Diana Belvita defeated Hannah Goldie. The bonuses went to Paiva and Phillips for fight of the night. Yanez and Elkins got performances of the night. So shout out to Yanez and Elkins for sure. Elkins is an OG. Wasn't going good for neither one of these guys early on, and they turned it around, came back. Not only did they win, they cashed the win bonus, and they got bonuses. So way to dig deep for both of those guys. And their opponents don't have anything to be ashamed of, especially Randy Costa. He looked a lot better than the last time I saw him. Beautiful jab, man. All right, folks, we'll talk more about that on Thursday. I'm sure we'll have some more guests. And early reminder that on August 7th, Goz and I will be doing a watch-along for UFC 265, headlined by Derek Lewis and Cyril Gane, for the UFC Interim Heavyweight Championship. Also, the women's GOAT, Amanda Nunes, is back. She defends against Juliana Pena. Should be an awesome card, and we'll be here on MMA Junkie to do our watch-along, just like we have been for all these pay-per-views over the past 3 years. We'll be back on Thursday with more interviews, with another show. And lastly, look out for our video franchises of Rankings Report, which I hope we can bring back today, Spinning Backlink, Legend to Legend, and, of course, the interviews we deliver where you can watch in full over at www.youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. All right, folks, we'll see you all on Thursday. Go out there and be a champion.